The Anton Savage Show with Kearys.ie on News Talk.
Andrew Hunter Murray is a writer, broadcaster and comedian. He spent a decade and a half researching for QI. He's host of the award-winning podcast No Such Thing as a Fish. He's now on his third novel, the title of which is A Beginner's Guide to Breaking and Entering. Andrew, good morning.
Good morning, Anton. Hi.
I'm very good. Andrew, I try to do, I try as a matter of principle to achieve two things when somebody is on talking about the book. A, to have read the whole thing, and B, not to get judgmental. Can I break both of those rules? I'm only halfway through, but it's great.
That's fair. Well, I hope you like the second half just as much. Yeah.
Well, so far it's very promising. Now, normally it is a sort of a dull question to ask a fiction writer, where do they come up with the inspiration for the idea? But the idea for this one is so odd. Solitary squatting in very fancy houses just for the fun of it, effectively breaking and entering just for the use of beds and kitchens. Where did that come from?
Well, it was weirdly, it was when I was working on my second book, someone let me go and stay in an empty house that they owned. It was just me and nothing else around me. So I was just working away on this thing. And I was in this house. I didn't know it. And, you know, all their stuff is there. Obviously, they were away. And, you know, you start living someone else's life. As anyone who's done house sitting will know this experience of, you know, you sort of start working out who these people are by what they've got. And it just got me thinking, I wonder if I could have got into this place without the owner's permission, you know. And that started this whole thing of coming up with this character, Al, who lives in lovely empty second homes without the owner's permission and has a great time doing it.
It is such a clever motif. And the other thing that I'm intrigued by is, to what extent do you have to do? Because I figure you are into specificity around the accuracy of your data. To what extent do you have to research exactly how skylights operate and what kind of security cameras places have?
Oh, I broke into a lot of houses researching this book. Yeah. Because I spent my time researching professionally. So I think I've read a few guides from reformed housebreakers and things like that. I did do a fair bit of that. So there's some dramatic license. Basically, it's a little bit of a fantasy. Imagine having access to all the most beautiful houses that we'll never be able to afford. Imagine you could just stroll into any one of them and live like you're the rightful owner. And anytime someone challenges you, you've got a backup story ready to go. So that's the idea.
Well, it is hugely enjoyable, and it's a rollicking, tight, fast read. It's great crack. I'm enjoying it immensely. Now, can I talk to you about, you did what I have long aspired to do, which is, I have this dream that one day John Lloyd is going to discover me.
Oh.
And he's going to whip me away from it all and bring me to QI and I will be rich and famous and relaxed and all the rest of it. You actually did that.
We're still working on Rich and Famous, but yeah, I met John Lloyd when I was a student. He came to speak at my university, and you know, he's such a great man. Blackadder, QI, Spitting Image, Not the 9 o'clock News. He's made it all, and that's how I started working at QI, and it was my first job. So I'm completely ruined for real work now. You know, it's been so much fun the last 15 years.
But you just sent him a spec letter saying, "Can I have a gig?" Was that it?
He took me on for some work experience, and he said, "Go away and find out about things beginning with G for the next month," which is a very broad brief. And at the end of the month, I sent him a big dossier of everything I'd found about grapes and grease and gunmetal and whatever it was. And clearly it'd work because I'm, you know, I did that work experience for 14 years. So yeah, it's a very odd hiring process, you know, but it's been wonderful.
I think you can predict my next question.
Oh yeah.
Tell us about grapes and grease and gunmetal.
Oh, you know what? I mentioned grapes because they're the one thing I've never really cracked finding interesting. John has this amazing mantra: anything is interesting if you really look at it from the right angle or the right, you know, for long enough. And everyone goes away and researches these amazing things. Grapes are unique in that I actually still find them quite dull. I like them, you know, I don't mind eating them, but no, I have a reputation on our podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish, as the one who's interested in really quite quite boring stuff, quite kind of suburban dad level stuff that apparently is the stuff that interests me. So, you know,
is there not something in the genetics of grapes that should be interesting? Is there not something in the transfer of old world vines to the new world and the renaming of them? There must be something in there.
No, actually, that is good. I think you're onto something with that, because there's some plant where all the vines in the world, it's some particular kind of wine, all of them are actually American, even the ones in Europe, because all the ones in Europe were wiped out by a pest or whatever it was, and they were all reinstalled on vines that had been growing away in America.
Oh, that's very good.
I can't remember the details of that. You often find yourself delivering the first half of a killer fact when you've been working at QI and then saying, you have to fill in the rest yourself, I'm afraid. But yeah.
There's another one like that about the transfer of stuff. What's the one of the gentleman who decided that all of the birds mentioned in Shakespeare needed to be present in the United States?
Yes. There was this reintroduction society, and it was exactly that. It was introducing hundreds of species of completely inappropriate birds to a new environment, and that was a mega project. And I think they have they had that in New Zealand as well, where they said, you know, the birds we've got at the moment, they're quite delicate, beautiful, shy things, but we need a bit more life and energy, so we're going to introduce some completely inappropriate but very noisy birds, and. That was about 100 years ago. I think we've now wised up to it a bit, that maybe we shouldn't be doing that. But yeah, that was a crazy period.
Yeah, I remember reading that the economic impact of that in the States, still to this day, because one of the birds that was introduced was starlings, it runs between $2 and $3 billion of crop impact every year, thanks to the starlings that were artificially introduced into the States.
Wow. Yeah, it's mad. I'm a big fan of stories about reintroductions, because there are all these people who love, you know, there are a lot of scientists now working on the idea of reintroductions across Europe. You know, we're very excited. We've just got some beavers back in London. I can't remember what they're called. They're called something like Beaver Peron, and I can't remember their names. Anyway, but, you know, and you've got people going a bit crazy and saying, well, let's try for the mammoth. And I think, well, maybe let's just do the elephants first of all, make sure they're all right and set up, you know.
Do you remember lads made soup out of a mammoth?
Yeah, that's right, because you find the bones in the permafrost as it melts. And then there was a company a year ago, they made a mammoth meatball using, so they could have grew the cells, the proteins that they found in the bones, and they turned it into a meatball, which then they didn't even eat. I found that very disappointing. I would love to have a report from someone who'd eaten that, you know.
What's the story with London having beavers?
Well, we've just got a newly re-elected mayor, Sadiq Khan, who's very keen on environmental stuff. And I think there are various nature reserves in London where beavers might benefit the sort of the wetlands, and you know they build a lot of dams and they help the flooding and all of this. So no, the UK is gradually being turned on to beavers, if I can put it that way. not sure I can actually at this time of day, but yeah, it's I love that kind of thing. Yeah.
Do you run out of it? Is there a point where the curiosity with the trivial but fascinating, where one day you go into QI or there's no such thing as a fish and just think,
yeah,
I'm done now, lads. I have enough knowledge. I want to stop.
You would think so. And it's weird, isn't it? Because it's through things that seem trivial that you find out the most interesting things. You think, I can't believe I've never heard this about the way whatever it is operates. You know, we were talking on the fish this week about a process called quantum dots, which is this really complicated scientific thing, but it turns out that stained glass makers 1,000 years ago unwittingly were using quantum dots in the stained glass process. And it's fascinating. We've been going 10 years once a week. We thought about 2 years in, we must be running out of subjects now, and they keep on coming up, because the finding out new things, the process of finding out new things is a big part of what makes us human. And it's about continuing that process, and we're lucky to do it full time. But the thing is that we're just people with access to the internet and time to read about things. You know, everyone is a latent QI elf. Everyone likes learning something new. So yeah, there's a lot more meaning behind it than there seems to be, I think.
Does it inform your writing, or do you have to keep the two separate? Because one of the things, you know, that Somerset Maugham line about murdering your darlings, one of the nice things about at least the first half of your book, it could go pear-shaped, but the first half, it's lovely and taut. There isn't an awful lot of extraneous stuff in it. Do you have to hold back from a desire to say, while I'm at it, let me do half a page on grape reintroduction?
I think so, because I have it's a pet peeve of mine, the bit of a novel where you get there and you find out, oh, so the author is actually very interested in rowing, and you can tell that the editor has not been able to persuade them to cut out the very lengthy description of rowing or whatever it is. So yeah, I'm quite careful. You know, I'm trying to write a story that's about housing. It sort of engages with the disaster of housing in the UK at the moment, but most importantly of all, it's meant to be entertaining. It's meant to grip and thrill. And you have to do that. You can't ever take a day off that and say, oh, I'll just write a chapter of background now. It's all got to be stitched in.
Likewise, how do you handle the whole self-starting thing? Because one of the nice things about working for John Lloyd is you work for John Lloyd. There is an expectation that you show up. Whereas if you're writing yourself, you just have to grind it out.
Yeah, I don't know. I think because I always wanted to be a writer and then spent, the first 10 years of my working life doing other things that were not novels. So I think it was something I always hoped I'd get back to eventually. I try and keep the first hour or two of the working day, before the day job, as novel time. And that's when I've got my best brain on. So that seems to help.
In doing the research as an elf, do you become depressed at being a dilettante in so many different areas? Because that's the one thing I find is when you start down one of these tracks, you realize not what I've just learned, but how much I don't know.
Oh, completely. Completely. Yeah. And I really admire the people who are actually doing the scientific or the research work or whatever, the deep level stuff that enables us to make our silly show. The four of us who make the show, we know more about, let's say, lugworms than anyone else, apart from the people who really know about lugworms, and they really know, And I just admire those people so much. I've slowly accepted that that's not completely my nature. I'm never going to be Europe's foremost lugworm man. And I just have to cope with that. But it is amazing work that people do.
And what's the difference between a lugworm and a ragworm?
Oh, now you're testing me, Anton. Lugworms are the ones that live under the sand. There's this weird strata on beaches of these strange worms, and they sort of leave their cast on the beach, and they're really important, and people go and kind of plunge them out. I did not think I'd be talking about lugworms this morning. You see, this is the benefit of the 10 years. Something crops up.
Well, I will do you a deal. If you promise to come back, we'll open with lugworms and I'll give you time to think about it in advance.
Great. Thank you.
Andrew, it has been a great pleasure. And it's a bank holiday weekend here, so I'm very much looking forward to spending all of tomorrow finishing the other half of your very good book. The very good book is A Beginner's Guide to Breaking and Entering. The author is Andrew Hunter Murray. Andrew, thanks again.
The Anton Savage Show with Kiri's.ie on News Talk.